Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine your world is filled with smart devices, not just the ones you hold, but computing power everywhere, woven into your environment, controlling things seamlessly.
Right.
That's the vision of pervasive computing, and honestly, it's less a future dream and more our current reality taking shape.
Yeah.
But there's a catch. While the hardware is getting smaller, cheaper, and more connected, the software, building applications that can actually live and breathe across all these fluid, sometimes disconnected devices.
Yeah.
Well, that's still a massive hurdle.
It really is. We're used to building software for stable networks, you know, where if a connection drops, it's usually seen as a problem, something
Yeah,
to fix.
the exception.
Exactly. But in pervasive computing, where devices are mobile, moving in and out of range, constantly managing battery life, temporary disconnections aren't failures. They're just, well, they're how it works,
The norm.
pretty much. And creating apps that can gracefully handle this churn, adapting where they run or how they connect, that puts a huge burden on developers using traditional methods.
Absolutely. It means we need entirely new ways to design software for this dynamic environment. And that's precisely why we're diving into a specific source today.
Okay.
It's a master's thesis from 2008 by engineer Bynum Mugisha titled Resilient Partitioning of Pervasive Computing Services.
2008, interesting. So quite prescient.
It feels like it. Our mission today is to cut through the detail and get to the core insight. What revolutionary software model did this work propose to tackle these fundamental pervasive computing challenges? And, why is that insight still so relevant?
So the thesis really hones in on the fundamental problems. As you mentioned, devices aren't just numerous. They're often resource constrained, limited battery, less processing power, and critically, their network connectivity is highly unreliable and variable, just inherently volatile.
Right.
The author looked at existing distributed application approaches from that time, things like JOrchestra, Java Party, others, and basically found they just weren't built for this reality.
They made assumptions that didn't hold up.
Exactly. They often assumed stable connections, or maybe they required partitioning decisions to be made before the application even started running. Compile time or initial setup.
Right. They weren't flexible enough for a world where devices are constantly joining and leaving the network, or just temporarily unreachable.
Precisely. So the thesis identified four key requirements for any software tool trying to make applications truly work in this pervasive space. These weren't just nice-to-haves, they were framed as essential capabilities.
Okay, what were they?
First, runtime application partitioning.
Runtime. So while it's running?
Yes. The app shouldn't be stuck running on one device or a fixed set. It needs to be able to dynamically spread its pieces across whatever devices are available while it's running.
Got it. What's next?
Second, user-controlled application partitioning.
Ah, so I get to decide.
Yeah, the idea is that you, the person using the app, should have some say in how it's distributed. Maybe you want part of it on your phone, part on a nearby display. You control that shift.
Okay, that makes sense. Number three.
Third, retractable application partitioning. If you've stretched an app's functionality onto another device, maybe temporarily,
You need a way
you
back.
need a way to bring it back, yeah, to revert to an earlier configuration easily. It shouldn't be a one-way street.
Okay, and the last one sounds crucial.
And crucially, the fourth one, partitioning resilient to network failures. The app has to survive those frequent network hiccups. If a device temporarily goes offline, the whole thing shouldn't just collapse or freeze.
It needs to handle the messiness.
It needs to handle the messiness. Meeting those requirements, particularly the user control and resilience in the face of network volatility, is where the truly insightful part of the thesis comes in.
Okay.
It proposes a specific software model called the Resilient Actor Model.
Resilient actor model.
Okay, this builds on the well-established actor model concept, but extends it specifically within the framework of AmbientTalk, which was a programming language actually designed for mobile ad hoc networks.
Ah, so the language choice was deliberate.
Very much so. The core idea is that an application is built as a collection of independent, loosely coupled units the thesis calls resilient actors.
Okay.
Think of them as smart, self-contained components, each responsible for a piece of the application's function, but designed from the ground up to operate in a distributed, concurrent environment.
Okay, so the application is a bunch of these resilient actors. How do these pieces, potentially living on different devices, communicate with each other without, falling apart when the network gets flaky?
That's handled through something called elastic bindings.
Elastic bindings.
These are the connections, the remote references between the resilient actors, and the elastic part is key. They're designed with inherent flexibility.
Okay.
They explicitly support the two main operations defined by the model: stretching and retraction.
The partitioning and the pulling back.
Exactly. Stretching is how you initiate distributing a resilient actor or part of the application to another device. Retraction is the reverse, bringing it back or reconfiguring.
And the communication itself.
Communication over these elastic bindings uses asynchronous messages and, critically, leverages AmbientHawk's underlying mechanism for handling partial failures, known as FAR references.
FAR references. What does that mean practically?
It means if a connection temporarily drops between two actors, the messages sent aren't just lost, they're buffered, held onto,
Oh.
and then they're delivered automatically once the connection is reestablished.
That buffering feature sounds vital for resilience. It really makes sense that AmbientHawk was chosen as the implementation platform then.
Absolutely. Given its existing strengths for these dynamic distributed environments, the actor-based concurrency, the built-in discovery of other devices, peer-to-peer service discovery,
Right.
and that handling of partial failures you mentioned, the thesis actually used AmbientHawk's reflective capabilities to add these resilient partitioning concepts without altering the core language itself.
So it layered the model on top.
Clever. Exactly. It defined things like hybrid objects and mirrored isolates for the resilient actors, and proxy objects for the elastic bindings. It even added specific language constructs like actor resilient A's and bind to resilient A's to make it easier for developers.
Got it. So it wasn't just theoretical, they built the mechanisms.
Right. And beyond just defining actors and bindings, the model introduces another powerful concept: resilient strategies.
Strategies, like ways they behave.
Exactly. These are like behavioral policies you can apply to either a resilient actor or an elastic binding. They dictate how that specific component should react when a stretch or retract operation is initiated.
Ah, okay. So it adds another layer of control.
A huge layer. This is where the real control and adaptability come in, because a stretching doesn't just mean move, it depends on the strategy.
Okay, let's walk through those strategies because they sound fundamental to how this model achieves its flexibility. The thesis outlines four core ones.
That's right, four main ones.
What's the first?
First, the move strategy. This is probably the most direct, most intuitive one.
All right, just pick it up and move it.
Yeah, basically, if you stretch an actor with the move strategy, the actor itself is transferred to the new location. Retracting moves it back. The thesis also mentions this strategy can involve maintaining a backup copy at the origin for automatic recovery if the connection fails mid-move.
Okay, simple enough. Move. What else?
Second, the copy strategy.
Copy.
So duplicate.
Exactly. Stretching an actor with this strategy doesn't move the original. It creates a copy of the actor at the destination.
Ah, so the original stays put.
Right. And retraction then means the connection simply goes back to the original actor that stayed put. This seems useful if you want local instances running on multiple devices, maybe for performance or offline access.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay, move, copy. What's number three?
Third, the rebind strategy. This one's quite different.
Okay.
Stretching here doesn't move or copy the actor itself. Instead, it tells the elastic binding, the connection,
Yeah.
to connect to a different actor on the destination device that provides the same kind of service. Oh, interesting. So it finds an equivalent service locally.
Precisely. Maybe there's already a service running on that device that does the same thing. Retracting then means rebinding back to the original actor's location. This seems really smart for leveraging local resources or perhaps finding redundant services.
Very clever. Okay, that's rebind. And the last one.
And finally, the standstill strategy. This is the simplest, and it's the default if you don't specify anything else.
Standstill. So it
Yeah.
just ignores the commands.
Pretty much. An actor or binding with this strategy simply ignores stretch and retract commands applied directly to it. It stays put. This is for the parts of your application that absolutely need to remain anchored, maybe tied to specific hardware.
Got it. So move, copy, rebind, and standstill. Those are the basic options for how things react.
Right, and the interesting complexity, or maybe the power, comes when stretch or retract operations propagate through the elastic bindings from one actor to another.
Ah, so triggering one can cause a cascade.
Exactly. And since both the actor and the binding connecting to it can have strategies, there can be conflicts.
Like the actor wants to move, but the connection says stand still.
Yeah, or vice versa. The thesis touches on a conflict resolution mechanism. It's quite nuanced, but often the binding strategy can influence or even override the actor strategy in certain propagation scenarios.
Okay, that sounds like it could get complex, but it allows for fine-grained control.
It does. It allows you to define really specific behaviors for how the application reconfigures itself.
The best way to truly grasp how these pieces, actors, binding strategies work together is probably through the concrete example presented in the thesis, right? The ambient music player application.
Absolutely. That's the case study they used. And crucially, this wasn't just a theoretical idea. The author actually built this prototype using the resilient actor model in Ambient Talk to demonstrate its capabilities.
Okay, so how is the music player structured?
So the music player application is composed of four main resilient actors, and each was assigned a specific strategy. First, you have the main ambient music player actor. This represents the overall application logic, kind of the central coordinator. It's given the standstill strategy, it stays put.
Okay, the core stays where it starts.
Then there's the controller actor. This handles user input play, pause, skip, and manages the playback commands. This one is set to the move strategy.
Move? Okay, so the controls can travel.
Then there's the music library actor, which manages the list of songs, the metadata. Its actor strategy is copy.
Copy. Interesting.
And the binding from the controller to the music library uses the rebind strategy, specifically marked to rebind to something providing a music library service.
Okay, so the actor is copy, but the connection to it is rebind. That sounds like where the conflict resolution might matter.
Exactly. And finally, the audio actor, which interfaces with the actual speakers, the hardware, both this actor and the binding from the controller to it are set to the standstill strategy.
Standstill. Makes sense. The audio output needs to stay with the speakers. Okay, so you have these four components with their defined behaviors, connected by these elastic bindings, some of their own strategies. Now let's run the scenario from the thesis. The application starts on a device like a hi-fi system in your living room. You, the user, walk into the room with your cell phone and want to control the music from there. So you initiate a stretch operation on the main ambient music player actor, targeting your cell phone. What happens?
Okay, so the stretch hits the ambient music player actor first. But because it has the standstill strategy, the main application logic itself remains anchored on the hi-fi.
It ignores the stretch, basically.
For itself, yes. However, the stretch operation propagates from it through its elastic bindings to the actors it's connected to.
Okay. So it passes the instruction along.
Right. It propagates to the controller actor. Now, the binding connecting the ambient music player to the controller has the move strategy. And the controller actor itself also has the move strategy.
So move and move. Pretty clear signal.
Yes. Following the model's propagation and conflict rules, where mover usually overrides standstill for propagation, and the actor's own strategy takes effect to fact, the controller actor effectively moves from the hi-fi system to your cell phone. It follows you.
Fascinating. So the piece you actually interact with, the controls, moves to the device you're holding. That's neat. What about the connections from the controller, now that it's on the phone, to the music library and audio actors back on the hi-fi?
Right, the stretch propagates onward from the newly moved controller. Let's take the audio actor first. The binding from the controller to the audio actor uses the standstill strategy, and the audio actor itself is also standstill.
Standstill, standstill, so nothing happens there.
Correct. As expected, the audio actor and its connection remain firmly on the hi-fi, where the actual speaker hardware is, which is exactly what you want.
Definitely. Now, the interesting one, the music library.
Yes. The binding from the controller to the music library uses that specific rebind music library service strategy. Mm. Now remember, the music library actor itself had the copy strategy. But in this case, the rebind strategy on the binding takes precedence over the actor's copy strategy for this operation. So this doesn't move the original music library actor from the hi-fi, nor does it necessarily create a copy on the phone based on this specific interaction. Instead, it causes the controller's elastic binding to reconfigure itself to connect to a different instance of a music library service that it discovers running locally on the cell phone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredibly clever. So with one user action initiating that stretch towards your phone, the system intelligently reconfigures itself based on these predefined strategies.
Exactly.
The part that takes your commands, the controller, comes with you to your phone. The part that accesses the song list, the music library connection, finds and uses a local instance on your phone, maybe for better performance or offline browsing.
Could be.
And the part that actually plays the sound, the audio actor, stays exactly where it needs to be, connected to the speakers on the hi-fi.
Precisely. This music player example beautifully validates the core requirements identified earlier in the thesis.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's tick them off. It demonstrated runtime partitioning because the application reconfigured itself while running.
Check.
It showed user control because a single user action, that stretch message, drove this complex partitioning change.
Check.
The model inherently supports retraction to reverse these changes, allowing partitions to return, even if the example didn't walk through clicking retract.
Right, the mechanism is there. Check.
And most importantly, because it's built on Ambient Talk's architecture with those FAR references and message buffering.
The underlying foundation.
The connections between these distributed actors are designed to be resilient to network failures. If the phone briefly lost Wi-Fi, the messages would queue up.
Exactly. And the strategies could even potentially trigger automatic retraction or rebinding if a failure persists, though the details depend on the specific strategy implementation. So, resilience, check.
And this really highlights the novelty compared to those earlier distributed system tools we talked about. They often lack this kind of dynamic, user-directed reconfiguration, and especially this built-in resilience specifically for mobile volatile networks.
Yeah, many partition to things at compile time or maybe automatically based on system load, but not typically with this kind of explicit user control and resilience focus at runtime.
This model feels specifically designed for the messiness of real-world pervasive computing.
It absolutely does. It seems to move beyond those rigid assumptions of stable wired networks and embraces the reality of devices moving around and connections flickering in and out.
The thesis also mentions this is sort of a first step, right? Pointed towards future work.
Yes, definitely. The author suggested several avenues, exploring more resilient strategies beyond just those four, perhaps more complex ones, looking into context-aware strategy selection.
Oh, like automatically picking copy if the network is slow or move if it's fast.
Something like that, yeah. Adapting based on current conditions or device capabilities. Also, improving the underlying serialization mechanisms. And critically, building larger, maybe multi-user pervasive applications using this model to really stress test it and refine the concepts further.
So taking it beyond the music player prototype.
Right. See how it scales. See what new challenges arise.
So thinking about this now, what does this all mean for you, the listener, grappling with the apps you use today? Consider things like streaming music apps, smart home controls, even collaborative tools that span your phone, your tablet, your computer.
Things that try to create a seamless experience across devices.
Exactly. But how many times have you hit a snag because the connection drops, or you move a device out of range and suddenly things stop working or get out of sync?
Happens all the time.
Could a model like this resilient actor model, where application components can dynamically move, copy, or rebind based on defined strategies and are fundamentally resilient to network hiccups, make those experiences smoother, more adaptable, and just plain more robust?
It certainly suggests a different way to architect them. It moves away from treating distribution as just putting pieces in different places and focuses more on the dynamics of that distribution.
It really makes you think. In a world that's only getting more saturated with interconnected mobile devices, this pervasive environment isn't going away.
No, it's accelerating.
So this raises a bigger question, maybe. What other fundamental shifts do we need in how we think about designing software? How else can we make applications that don't just run on our devices, but truly flow effortlessly with us through our constantly changing digital and physical environments?
That adaptability, that resilience.
Yeah.
How do we bake it in from the start rather than trying to bolt it on afterwards?
Something worth pondering indeed. This has been a really fascinating deep dive into some foundational ideas that feel surprisingly relevant for our connected future.